It's time to laugh, learn, and take your photography to the next level with your favorite cowgirls with cameras, Kara, Kim, and Phyllis.
Welcome to the Cowgirls with Cameras podcast. I'm Kim Beer with Be More Business and Kim Beer Photography.
I'm Kara with Fast Horse Photography.
And I'm Phyllis with Phyllis Burchette Photo. Hello, good afternoon, and welcome.
Hi.
It's another one of those afternoon recordings that we keep saying we shouldn't do, and now here we are yet doing it again.
We got to take the time we can take when we can get it. It's all we got.
That's right. That's the truth. And boy, I don't know what happened. You know, it felt really nice and like slow at the first part of the year and like, yeah. Oh my gosh, it was great. And then I don't know, something flipped a switch in the middle of February and I feel like I'm on a rocket ship to the moon.
Same. Yep.
It's just like crazy. So what has everybody been up to?
I've been photographing baby foals the last several
days.
That
sounds like a lot of fun.
Yep. I'm actually working on some images right now for one. So that's what I've done. I've photographed you guys. Well, for those folks that are listening that have been to some of our events, they may, especially the ones here in Florida, they may have met Potato and Oakley. They were at one of our Horses on the Beach events and they both had their babies. And so I went out and photographed their babies, Wiley and Clover. This
Aww.
Week. So yes, they're
I
very cute.
It.
Sam is a proud mom.
She's a proud mom.
Or grandmom. I'm not sure which one you want to say it, but
that's right.
I kind of miss having baby colts around.
I do too.
Yeah.
Nostalgic this time of year.
Yeah, I very much miss it. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It just nothing says spring like to me, like going out and seeing the babies. So it's been fun. And it's always one of those things where it's like, I think they have an expectation of like what they hope to get. But then the foals always have their own ideas of like, oh, they're going to be super sleepy today instead of running and bucking. Or, you know, one of them had the little foal scours. And so we were like trying to avoid its little booty for most of the session. But it was good. It was great. It's been good.
Yeah. That sounds like a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah.
What about you, Phyllis? What have you been up to?
Oh, I'm just like you, Kim. It feels like I'm constantly busy and I'm never getting anything done. And and my list, I keep checking things off my list, but my list keeps growing. But thankfully, I get to do something fun next week. I get to head to Nebraska, so I'll be seeing a lot of baby calves. Well, calves.
Aww,
so,
how fun.
A lot of them. So that'll be fun.
If kids were calves, I'd have 10 million of them. There's something about a baby calf. A colt are cute, but baby cows are them and baby goats. Like those are my
two favorite baby animals.
Oh.
I like them all, but I mean, baby goats are the most entertaining things I have ever seen.
Yeah, they certainly are. They're chaos unleashed upon the world for sure. My last couple of weeks have been taken up with geriatric horses with health problems.
So
I have one on a every other day we have to change the bandage on his foot and he's recovering from a laminitis flare up. And then the other one has had respiratory issues. And now, Phyllis, I was going to tell you, because I know you battle this with one of yours that you oversee, but now we're on an inhaler.
Yeah, well, we had that last year. It didn't do ours much good, so.
I'm hoping it does him some good,
yeah.
But we're on an inhaler, so he has to get his puffs twice a day. So we'll see how we do.
Good luck. Hopefully you have better luck with it than we did. So far, we had a really bad bout about when it got really, really hot here for that few days. And then it's been up and down a lot here. It's been like 80 degrees, 85 degrees, and then it'll be like 60 the next day.
Yeah.
So they did put her on something different. So, and it wasn't, I had sent them the medicine. You said yours was on, but they did something different. So, and I can't remember what it was.
Yeah. Well, I think we're off of that medicine and on to something else. I mean, all I know is the vet said the words gold standard of care, and I immediately saw my bank account cringe.
Thankfully, I don't own the one I'm dealing with, so.
Yeah. He said, this is the gold standard of care, and my wallet went puckered. Like, oh, God, what have you just done? Anyway, awesome. Well, let's get on to our topic for today, which is why your horse photos are blurry.
We get asked that question all the time.
We get asked that question a lot.
Why are my horse photos so blurry? So here we are doing an episode.
We're doing an episode. So we're going to talk about some things that you can do to stop your horse photos from being blurry, to be able to have a nice in-focus shot. So Kara's going to talk about one thing that factors into that, which is shutter speed, ISO, and aperture, which is that fun little exposure triangle that we preach about all of the time. I'm going to talk a little bit about focus points and modes, which is another factor that you have to consider in how sharp your images are. And then Phyllis is going to talk a little bit about troubleshooting and maybe looking at why your photos are blurry in certain instances. And she's going to give you some pretty good guidelines, it looks like, here for you to, some bumper rails for you to not bump against. All right, Kara, you're up with the exposure triangle. Make it exciting.
Okay, I'll go first. So exposure triangle is one of the first things that I look at when I start seeing blurry photos, or if I see blurry photos, I'll look down at my settings and I'll be like, what the heck am I doing? And a lot of times when we're working with photographers out in the field, this is one of the culprits, is there's something off in the exposure triangle. And for me, it's almost always shutter speed is the first place I have to look. So it's usually the culprit. I've usually managed to drop it down too low, and I'm not a steady hand personally. So if there's other people out there like me, then it's okay. You just got to bump that shutter speed up a little bit more. So horses are always moving. They move more than we think they're moving. Even the ones that look like they're standing, they're like perfectly still and they're being perfect for the camera. They're moving. Things like, you know, they flick little flies or they flick their ears, bat their eyelashes. Those things can all make for a blurry photo if your shutter speed isn't high enough to accommodate that. So even when horses are standing still, ideally, you want to have a faster shutter speed. Some photographers are happy to stand and handhold at 250, 300, you know, just any of those shutter speeds. I cannot handhold at probably less than 500. And if I'm photographing horses, any kind of movement at all, my minimum that I like to have is 1/1000th. Just curious, are you guys about the same with that?
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. I can handhold a little lower than 500.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty steady. And also, I think today's technology makes up a little bit because of all the image stabilization tools that are available in more modern cameras. Yeah. So I'll give the 250 a try and zoom in. It kind of depends on the day and whether or not the horse is standing really still.
Yeah, so that would be a total no-go for me. I would have a blurry image shooting at 1/250th. So the next thing I usually will look at is my ISO. So when I first started shooting, I was terrified of shooting anything over than like, I would try really hard to keep my ISO at 100. Like I just learned that somewhere. And so I would try to keep my ISO at 100, and anything over that, I started to panic and I was like, oh no, it's going to get too high and I'm going to have a lot of noise. And I know part of that was because I was shooting with an old model camera and it really didn't have a lot of play. Like I really had to be very careful and I would get really ugly, blurry, grainy images. But I've learned over the years that it's more important to have the image. It's more important to have a slightly noisy image than it is to have a blurry image. But regardless of everything, you have to have an image, especially if you're trying to create for your client. So I am less worried about my ISO as I used to be, but I do make sure that I'm thinking about that every time that I'm shooting. And situations that can be really challenging, like indoor arenas, covered arenas, heavily backlit subjects, really overcast, gloomy days, shady barns, or if you're shooting like a black background portrait where you're shooting into a darker scene, you know, that's going to require you to really think about that a little bit more, and you may have to make some allowances for those situations. And then the last thing I would think about is looking at your aperture, because the depth of field and how much light is entering your lens will also affect if you have potentially blurry or crisp images. So if you're looking at an image and your horse is out of focus, but your rider, if your horse is in focus, but your rider's out of focus, or flip that around the other way, this could be because of your aperture. I think for me, this is really noticeable when I'm photographing horses that are coming towards me, or maybe are angled in a direction that's coming towards me. And I like to shoot horses that are coming towards me at f6.3 or higher, a higher number just to make sure that I'm getting both the horse's face and the rider in focus, unless I'm trying to maybe be creative and maybe I only want the horse's face in focus, or I only want the rider's face in focus, and then have some of that, you know, drop off into a blur on the other end of that. So how this works all together is when I'm sitting down and I'm thinking about my scene, I'm saying to myself, what's the priority right now? And a lot of times if I'm photographing horses, it's stopping the action is the priority if I want to have my images not be blurry. So a lot of times I'll set my shutter speed first, and then I will build my ISO and my aperture settings around that shutter speed. There are times though when I have to say to myself, okay, this image at that shutter speed that I feel the most comfortable at isn't going to have enough light. It's not going to look very good. It's going to be too dark. So then I have to say to myself, now I have to play with the wiggle room of what my shutter speed number is going to be. So that's when I might be risking it at 1/500, for example, just so I could get a really good exposure and have a less chance of getting a blurry image there because my exposure is too low. So that's my take on the exposure triangle in terms of blurry images and just setting up for success.
You know what's funny is I set my, so I think everybody has their favorite first setting, right? So I build my exposure triangle around aperture.
Okay.
Like that's what I look at to say, how do I want to tell this story? Do I want to have part of this image be blurry, or do I need it to be sharp from front to back? And then I will build my exposure triangle for, and then my second consideration is shutter speed. And so the bare minimum for that, and then I'll build the ISO in last to determine.
That's probably why your images are more creative than mine, because you're able to like think about that story a little bit more. And I'm like, I just have to stop the motion.
So I think everybody has their favorite. So yeah. What would be fun is if Phyllis's favorite was ISO, but I doubt that it is. What do you set your triangle around? That would mean one apiece, right?
Right. Well, actually, I go by what I'm going for, what kind of story I am trying to tell. So obviously if it's about like maybe I'm panning and I do want some blur, then it's still going to be about the shutter speed. And if I want a stop action, it's going to be about the shutter speed. If it's a portrait, it's more about the aperture, but they all work together. So
true. Yeah. True. I think that, you know, like you may have a place you want to start and that may be scene dependent on when,
for me,
when
it
you
is.
Started.
Yeah.
Yeah, for scene dependent or story dependent, depending on what you want to do. So the fun thing about photography is there's no one right way to do it. The curse of photography is there's no one right way to do it.
Oh, but that's the fun of photography.
That's the fun of it.
Yeah, it's one of those blessing and a curse kind of things. And I've got a couple of those in what I'm going to talk about today. So one of the most interesting things I see with students, especially people who are new to using their camera, is they don't know how to move their focal point around effectively. Like this is probably the thing, one of the key things, it's one of the key things that separates amateur photographers or hobbyists from pros. Professional photographers know how to manipulate their focal point without pulling their face away from the camera. They can do it easily and they can move it around without having to adjust hardly anything. It becomes really tight in muscle memory. Now, different cameras do these things differently. And also, there's, again, more than one right way to do it. So I think Kara and I do this differently. Like on my R5, I have the little toggly switch on the back. And I have it set to float. So whenever I move that toggle switch, it moves my focal point. And if you're watching me on video, I'm sitting here doing it with my thumb. But I can manipulate that and never pull that camera away from my eye. I think you hit the extra button, and because you're using back button focus, I'm using front button focus. And so it's a different type of a placement in how you can manipulate it. But you, if you watch both of us shoot, neither of us are pulling our camera away from our faces to be able to adjust that focal point.
Correct.
So it's a very important muscle memory to gain into how to move that focal point. Now, every camera is going to come with a variety of options of how to set those focal points up. there's always a single focal point. There's typically one that looks like a cross. There's one that's a set of 9 squares. There may be one of 4. There may be one of 12. And then there's a whole grid system inside of your viewfinder of your camera where you can move whatever configuration of focal points you have set up around so that you're able to precisely lay the area of focus in any image. When you're shooting with a more closed or stopped down aperture, which is the numbers that appear bigger in the exposure triangle, you have more latitude in front of and behind that focal point. The more open the aperture is, the less latitude, less depth of field that you have. And so if you creatively only want that horse's face in focus when it's running at you, you need to have your focal point precisely put over the eyeball of the horse, preferably, because the horse's nose hairs may be out of focus and his ear may be out of focus, but his eye will be in focus. If you're shooting with a shallow depth of field, if you're shooting with a tighter or more stopped down aperture, then you have more latitude in there. So it's where the creativity part of it comes. But all of the keys to getting that focal point in the place that you want it to be and getting a sharp image when it comes to focus are around you being able to manipulate that focal point without really having to think about it. And friends, here's the downside to this. I can tell it to you here. I can show it to you at one of our events. You can learn it from a class. But the only way you're going to build it is to do it. You have to get out there and you have to practice moving those focal points around. Even if it means sitting in your living room chair with your camera in your lap and just moving the focal point around all over the room without moving the lens of your camera and focusing on different objects and letting that camera react to those specific focal points, you will learn very quickly how to manipulate that focal point without moving your finger or moving the camera away from your face. Another place that I see when it comes to focus is that people get themselves in trouble with the eye recognition and the AI kind of tools around focus. So if you want to set that focus point, like I just said, if you want to have the control over where it goes and you have one of these auto settings turned on, you are going to be fighting that auto setting. So you have to know there's a time you can use these and be very effective with them. And then there are other times when they fail you repeatedly. My preference is not to use them at all unless I have some really specific situations. And for me, the specific situation is a dog, like a border collie that I would have a really hard time keeping up with running at me. That is the situation where I want to turn on the animal eye focus. Otherwise, I leave it off. And if you want your horse's face to be in focus and you have the human eye recognition focus turned on, you will not have a sharp focused horse face because it is going to always prioritize what looks like a human eyeball. And it makes mistakes. There are things on a horse that look like a human eyeball that aren't a human eyeball. So if you're finding yourself consistently not getting the images that you want and the sharpness in the area that you want, check to see if you have some of these auto settings turned on or these AI kind of search features and see if turning them off and learning how to manipulate that focus point will actually shift and change your ability to place that point of focus exactly where you want it to be. It is very, very important to learn in your camera system, whatever camera system you have, how to manipulate the autofocus system of that camera. You need to learn how to turn on and off those auto things that I talked about. You need to learn how to set up your focal point to move the way that you would like it to move. You need to know where in your menus to be able to switch back and forth between the different types of grids and the different ways of focusing. And believe it or not, those are great. Most of the time, I'm shooting on a single focus point. But if I am doing a panning set of images, I will change to one of more of the grid-shaped focal point collections, because I find that is actually more accurate for that. And you have to learn that. Different camera systems are adept at different things with that. And different people are going to respond differently to how those setups are done. The only way you're going to learn how you do it is to get out and actually use your camera and manipulate all of those settings. What ideally you want to accomplish in this part of your photography experience is to be able to get to the field and be able to modify whatever you're using for focal points and the different focal modes that you're using. You want to be able to manipulate those on the fly without having to try to figure out looking on your phone for your camera manual. Or if you happen to, I don't know, somehow have managed to have an ancient camera that came with a manual and be thumbing through it, trying to figure it out. So just get super familiar. If you're a Canon shooter, it's the pink menu. I don't know. Do the Nikon cameras have colored menus, Phyllis, or are they all black and white? Like in Canon, you can say the autofocus menu, it's the pink menu.
Oh, yeah. They have different colors. Yeah.
What is your focus color menu?
I don't know. I'd have to go look at it. I have
oh,
no idea.
Grief. Okay. Sorry. I put you on the spot with that. My bad. Okay. So one other thing that I want to talk about where I see another place, this is with the focus modes, where people can get themselves in a little bit of a pickle. So each camera system has a set of focus modes. And I'm going to talk first about Canon, and then I'll have Phyllis help me and we'll talk about Nikon. So in Canon, you have three modes. You have servo, one shot, and what I like to call useless mode, which is AI servo or AI. So in servo mode, your focal point, like where the camera is focusing, how the lens is focusing, is in constant search mode. So if something is moving toward you, it is constantly refocusing the lens on that specific point. And so if you have a moving object in Canon, you want to have your camera set on servo, because it is going to compensate for how that object that you're focused on is moving in relation to where you are. Then you have another mode called one shot. And this means that when you set your focus point, either pressing on your back button focus or pressing on the shutter button halfway down, that means that point is going to set. And if you recompose with your lens or the object that you are focused on moves, where the camera is going to set the focal point is where it was. So one shot is actually really good for portraits, because you have a lot of that search feature sometimes. The focus in and out, in and out, in and out will get the better of you. And it will sometimes make your portraits a little out of focus if you're using the servo mode. Sometimes you can get lucky, but predominantly one shot is a better choice there. If something is moving, like if you're shooting a horse running across a field, you want to have servo turned on, because you want that camera and the lens to be compensating the focus at every single position. And these modern cameras are super fast at that. They are super fast at it. So once you set your focal point, then when you hold the shutter button halfway down or you press your back button focus, then it will compensate for it as it moves across. Canon's third mode is AI. And basically what that means is it's using artificial intelligence to figure out which of the other two modes it's supposed to use. And I'm going to tell you, I love my cameras. I love my Canons. They are incredibly smart cameras. But this feature, for lack of a better term, sucks. So I don't ever use it.
Hopefully Canon's not listening right now. We never have a chance to have them as a sponsor at this point.
Well, no, they just need to make the AI thing better or stop putting it on there as an option. Their cameras make great decisions. This place is, I don't know, it's drunk when it does it.
We have the same thing. We have the auto, it's called auto, I think it's AFA, which is basically switches between the two, which I never use. So I
It's just they're drunk. They don't know what they're doing. But the other two modes are fantastic. And if I'm not mistaken, with my Nikon education, your two modes, continuous is our servo. So servo in the Canon is continuous on Nikon. And then one shot is one shot for both.
Single
brands.
It's called single.
Single shot, one shot, uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, we have high speed continuous, so not to confuse that with...
Yeah, and continuous, we have two different speeds. We have high speed and...
And Canon only has one.
We have two speeds as well. Well, the R3 does.
No, you have speeds for the drive, but not the focus motor. So high speed, that's another thing too that I think is confusing for people.
Mm-hmm.
There's a drive setting, which is high continuous, which means that when you press the shutter button down, you get multiple exposures. That is not to be confused with continuous and the focal mode, which is what I was just talking about.
Yeah.
The drive is a separate deal, and that should not affect your quality of focus in your images at all. Whatever drive you pick, it should be fine. If your exposure triangle is set correctly and your focal point is put on the proper spot, it shouldn't matter whether you are on single, like one every time you press the button, or if you press the button and you get rapid fire machine gun images. So your focal point should be fine as long as you have the other two things balanced ahead of them. Two other things I want to mention, and then we'll let Phyllis have part of the discussion. All of the things that Kara talked about are really appropriate when you're shooting in natural light. If you're shooting with off-camera lighting, the rules change. So ISO and shutter speed are dramatically affected by off-camera lighting. So just be aware of the fact that that introduces a whole nother can of worms to the equation. And we primarily shoot in natural light. We don't do a lot of off-camera lighting in our world. So I'm not going to dive into the specifics of that. If somebody has questions about it, I would be happy to do a live in the community, in our Cowgirls with Cameras community, about off-camera lighting and how it affects exposure or the exposure triangle. The other one I want to talk about is image stabilization inside your camera and inside your lens. There's two places where you can stabilize your images. One is a stabilization setting in the menu of your camera, and then the other are stabilization settings on your lens itself, depending on the lens. If it's not a pro level lens, it usually doesn't offer you the ability to do stabilization. I recommend you look at the stabilization features for your particular gear setup, for your camera and for your lens, and you Google them and figure out what all of the little numbers and settings mean, because they do have a meaning, and guessing is not always the great way to go about it. If you are typical of most of us, you're going to find the setting that would be the most useful, and you're never, ever going to change it. But it's really wise for you to know and understand what those three settings on your lens mean, if you have three, and what the different settings inside your camera mean, because stabilization can be both a blessing and a curse. Most of the time, it is a blessing, but there are times when stabilization becomes problematic, and many of those times are when you are using a stabilizing device on your camera. So you can actually create an out-of-focus photo by using a tripod with a camera with stabilization turned on. So you just have to understand the ins and outs for whatever particular gear setup you are using. And it's going to vary so widely. I don't even want to get into the points of what it would be in general. So just Google it, look it up, and you will be good. All right, Phyllis, I think those are all of my two cents about getting photos.
I think one point that you have made that is really important, that for each person's camera, they really need to look up the focusing modes. The whole focusing system in all these cameras is so intricate and detailed that people really need to study that more than you think.
Who had the Kale Bar? Who had the manual? There was a person with the manual. It's like 750 pages on the Nikon focusing system.
I think that was Leslie. Yeah.
That was Leslie. Yeah.
I was like, you want to talk about boring reading, but to tell you that you have this book that has, I mean, it was something crazy, like 500 pages deep.
It's crazy because we have 3D, we have, gosh, I mean, there's so many, there's dynamic, there's pinpoint, there's wide area, there's auto area. There's so many different things, you know, area focus. It's the area focus modes, I think, that get us a little bit, or gets me confused at least. So
yeah.
Not so much the actual focusing modes, but it's the area modes that get me a little.
So when you're talking about areas, just to qualify that for people who are listening, what I was referring to that is like the grid configurations. So when you go back and listen to this again, because you're going, Joe and I, what did they just talk about? But what Phyllis is mentioning is what I was calling the grid configurations. I don't know the technical term for all of them. I know what the shapes look like.
Yeah.
You have a whole training in our community on it that you give information.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. I have it in a non-overwhelming manner.
Yes.
Let me put it that way. It's not going to be 500 pages deep on all of it, but I did cover it pretty well in the Equine Photography for Beginners course. I got you enough to make you incredibly dangerous with your camera. And so
we all want to be.
Okay, well, is it my turn? Am I ready to go?
It is your turn, officially. I will be quiet now.
No, you guys have covered a lot. So I'm basically just going to troubleshoot. Like, let's just say you've done everything right. You've gone through what Kara said, and you used your exposure triangle to a T, and you've done everything Kim said with your focusing, and you still can't figure out what's happening. One reason could just be that your images may not look sharp is that maybe you were just playing too far away from your subject to begin with.
And then you're trying to zoom in.
Right.
Yeah.
It's always better to use the longest focal length that you have and compose the image in camera rather than relying on heavy cropping later. Because when you crop a lot, you're going to throw away a lot of important pixels and detail, which I know all of our cameras nowadays have more pixels to play with than they used to. But still, you have to be really careful about how much you crop out of I've seen people crop the tiniest pieces out of.
I know.
And they go, well, I have a 48 megapixel camera. I just don't understand why I can't do it. And I'm like, because you can't.
Because you cropped a 5,000 pixel wide image down to a 200 pixel wide
image. So anyway, that'll make your image appear much softer right off the bat. So don't do that.
Yeah.
Kara pretty much covered ISO. That was another thing is, you know, it is more important to get the shot. And if bumping your ISO means that you'll get the shot and otherwise you wouldn't, then by all means do it. But just keep in mind that noise sometimes does reduce detail and can make your photos look a little less crisp. So just keep that in mind. There's so many great noise reduction software out there, and sometimes a little noise is not a bad thing. So don't worry about it so much. I think Kim has kind of covered this one too, simply that sometimes the camera hadn't fully locked focus before the shutter was pressed. I've seen people where this has happened. They weren't really locked on the subject, but they're pressing the shutter, but they haven't locked in focus yet. So this is something that might take a little bit of practice, and you might have to have a little bit more of a feel for when your camera has actually grabbed focus. But I think, especially with the new cameras, the new mirrorless cameras, it makes the easier with eye detection and focus indicators than it used to be. And of course, the color changes too when focus is achieved. Another big factor could be your lens. As much as I hate to tell you that higher quality lenses are going to produce noticeably sharper images because better glass and better construction. There's a reason they cost more. It's just playing a better lens all the way around. It's what we call the pro lenses most of the time. So keep that in mind. If you have more of what we call a consumer lens, that is probably not going to be as sharp as what we call the professional camera lenses. Also, be sure, and I've seen people, not as much now as I used to when I did workshops, but I would have people come to workshops and they would be shooting totally manual focus. And they didn't even know the difference sometimes. But I don't see that as much as I used to a long time ago. But be sure you're using autofocus. Today's autofocus systems are so accurate, it's kind of hard to not shoot autofocus. Another helpful tip is the hand-holding rule. Your shutter speed should be at least the same as your focal length. In other words, if you're shooting at 125 millimeter, then you should be at least at 1/25 of a second. That'll help eliminate camera blur, or it's from camera shake, I would say, eliminate the blur from camera shake. Even if you have a good system that, like Kim was talking about with your stabilization, you still want to keep your shutter speed at least the same as your focal length. Of course, if your subject is moving, you're going to need even faster speeds than that. So, of course, keep that in mind if you're shooting horses moving. Also, I know Kim doesn't use this, but I think Kara and I both use back button focus, and it doesn't work for everybody. It does separate the focusing from the shutter button, and it'll help you lock focus more consistently. And it's not for everyone, but just try it and see if you like it. Give it more than a day and see if you like it if you haven't ever used it before. If you shoot in RAW, sometimes your images may appear a little bit softer straight out of the camera than what you're seeing on the back of the camera, which is a JPEG preview. That's perfectly normal. I don't see it quite as bad with my mirrorless cameras as I used to with a DSLR, though. I think for some reason they look sharper right out of the...
I do too.
Yeah.
I would agree, Phyllis.
Yeah. So yeah, just sometimes I know in the old days, you know, RAW files were kind of meant to be sharpened slightly during post-processing, but you know, keep that in mind too. That could be an issue. And of course, there's some technical issues. It could be that your diopter isn't properly adjusted so that what you see through the viewfinder is actually in focus. If you're consistently seeing blurry images, it also could mean that your lens needs to be calibrated to match your camera body. A lot of the new camera bodies have calibration in camera, so keep that in mind. Yeah, sharp images comes down to a combination of everything we talked about today. Good techniques, the right setting, and quality gear.
Yay. I have two more things. Mm-hmm. I have two more things I want to say to add to what Phyllis just said. If you are getting blurry images, clean your equipment. Maybe start with making sure that there's not a bunch of junk on the front of your lens. And secondly, check to make sure if you do use a filter that you're using a really super high quality filter that is not going to cause blurriness in your image. I know it's a pet peeve of Phyllis's. It's like, I spent all this money on a really fancy lens and then I'm going to put a cheap piece of plastic stuff over the end of my lens to protect it. So do keep that in mind as well, because those are two very simple factors that may be causing blurry images and you didn't even know that it was a factor. So clean your equipment and check your filters as well.
It feels like a lot and it could be really overwhelming for someone that's like, oh my gosh, I was really hoping for a simple answer in order to like not have blurry photos, but just start troubleshooting. And I will tell you that diopter thing. That thing has got me several times where I have like accidentally touched it or moved it and my eyesight's not so great anymore. And I'll be looking through them and be like, what the heck am I doing wrong? And now it's like one of my go-to things I look at before I start panicking. So yeah, just start at one thing and work your way through it and you'll find the answer with lots and lots of practice. So, okay. So we hope that you've enjoyed this episode today. We got a couple things going on. We've got some really great live events that we've been having over in the community. Those have been recorded and they are available for a lot of you. So we've got like, I don't even know how many hours of either video education, recorded lives where we've had awesome presentations. We had our first guest speaker in the community the other day, Guild Canvas, Tavis from over there.
Oh, that was awesome.
So cool.
Talk about awesome. That was probably one of the best presentations I've ever seen on that topic. So
yeah, it was really good.
Five stars to Tavis.
So there's just a lot of great stuff happening over there. If you're not over there and you're an equine photographer, you're missing out. So it's cowgirlswithcameras.community. Just go check it out. It's totally worth it. And then you can find us online. We are at Cowgirls with Cameras on Instagram, on Facebook, and on TikTok. And if you're thinking to yourself, I've been meaning to join these gals out in the field somewhere, we have, I think, a couple spots left at our total 2026 lineup of events. So there's still a chance you can get in. Head over to cowgirlswithcameras.com and head to our events page and just see what's available. We would love to see you out there somewhere. Hope you enjoy this episode.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Cowgirls with Cameras. Don't let the laughter and learning stop here. Join our community on social media and be sure to visit our website for more opportunities to fulfill your photography goals. Head to cowgirlswithcameras.com. That's cowgirlswithcameras.com. See you next time.